My name is Alvarius, and I have the honor of doing the intro keynote today. And I'm going to talk about the past, the present, and the future of MUT. Some of you might have lived through the past of MUT with us, and some of you might have just discovered MUT. So after this, hopefully, all of you should have the same context. Past, present, and future of MUT, or with the words of Kent Beck, make it work, make it right, and then make it fast. It fits surprisingly well to the phases or chapters that MUT went through. So I thought I'd structure the talk like that. So we start with the first chapter, make it work. It started basically 3.5 years ago when Justin and I got really inspired by Doug Forrest and decided to build our own fully on-chain game. And so this was a very early version of what we started building. Back then it was called ZK Dungeon. We quickly removed all the ZK from it because it actually didn't really matter for the game mechanics. But the game, the name stuck for a little bit. And then after around 6 months, we had this. All the game mechanics were really polished. All the UI was really polished as well. But we made one big mistake, which was we didn't really do any play tests until then. We really only played with the two of us. We thought it's fun. And maybe with a couple of people from the Doug Forrest office where we were working from at the time. But yeah, we never did any larger scale playtests. And so when we did our first larger scale playtests, after like 6 months, we realized it's actually not as fun as we thought. And so lesson learned, you should do playtests early and iterate based on that. We then tried to iterate from that point on, but because of the custom network stack that we had built for this game specifically, because there was no MUT at the time, iterating on this game was actually really hard. And for that, let me illustrate just real quick how we had to do things before MUT was a thing. We had positions in our game, so we created a mapping on our contracts and then getter functions on the contracts so that the client can initialize the initial state when the client loads up. And then we also had events whenever anything changed on the contract. So here in our move function, we had to set the storage, but then also emit an event and then replicate the whole state on the client. And then we had to do that with every type of state that we wanted to have in our game. Position was obviously not the only type of state. So health, energy, skills, inventory, and so on. Like, you get the idea. A lot of boilerplate just to keep the contract and the client state in sync. And then at some point, we also discovered ECS, which then kind of like made a big impression on us. It's kind of a pattern that people use in the traditional gaming industry a lot to manage the complexity of games. And so around this time, we decided to basically trash what we have so far and instead build a framework for ourselves to solve our own problems so that we, for the next project, can skip all the boilerplate and jump right into the game mechanics and iterate much more quickly. And so that's basically what became the version one of MUT. We basically implemented ECS on chain, and it worked pretty well, at least in terms of iterating faster. This is a screenshot of basically our second prototype we built, and this time it only took us a couple of weeks to build a functioning prototype. This is what eventually turned into SkyStrive. We did playtests, like a lot of them, and then iterated on it. And we also built another game around this time, which we called OPCraft. And that started almost as a challenge for ourselves. We wanted to see if we could put Minecraft fully on chain. And turned out it's possible. And we built actually the prototype of this even in the matter of a couple of days. We cut some corners, but like position, for example, wasn't fully on chain, like the player position. But it was possible because MUT basically solved almost all the hard problems that we had for our first prototypes were already solved, so here we could move much faster. And then we did a 2-week playtest of this, and it was really fun. People built a lot of crazy stuff, and there were even some emergent drama. There was one player who claimed a lot of regions around the spawn, and then declared the Autonomous People's Republic of OPCraft, and declared himself the Supreme Commander. And it was basically a communist regime. You could join the communist regime by giving up all your personal belongings. And they even built some on-chain and client extensions to basically be able to join the Autonomous People's Republic and then tap into the inventory of the Republic and so on. And people built monuments, and it was all very fun. But eventually, after 2 weeks playtest, nothing worked anymore. And that was because we used pretty strict ECS patterns back then, but there's some problems with ECS if you want to really model everything as ECS. In our case, one example was the inventory. We modeled our state in a way where each individual item was an entity. And so once people figured out how to mine with bots, they had like tens of thousands of dirt blocks in their inventory. And then each of those dirt blocks was a unique entity that had to be synchronized to the client. And also because of our data model, basically every player had to download the entire state of the entire world and the inventory of every player every time they wanted to load the game. And so after 2 weeks, people had to download multiple gigabytes of data just to boot the client. Which brings us to our next chapter, Make It Right. MUD 1 was really more of a prototype to see if we, you know, if this makes sense, like does it make sense to have a full stack framework and these patterns to iterate faster. And it proved that the developer experience and the iteration speed was much faster with it, but it had some fundamental limitations. And for that, to illustrate that, I'm going to give you a super quick ECS crash course in case you're not familiar. It's very simple. ECS stands for Entity Component Systems, and entities are basically just IDs, and then you associate data with them with components. And it works really well for something like position. You can have a position component, and then each entity has their position in this component. Works well. But then for something like an inventory, it's much trickier because you have to associate everything with entities. So you basically have two options for an inventory. Option one is what we used for OPCraft, which is each item is its own entity. And then you have something like an owned by component, which basically associates the owner of this entity with the item, and then you model the inventory that way. But then you run into this problem with, you know, 10,000 unique dirt blocks in your inventory. Another option is a little bit more hacky. You can basically create this kind of pseudo entity by something like hashing together the player and the item, and then that's your entity, and then you associate the number of entities, or the number of items the player has with this pseudo entity. But it's really hacky, not nice to work with. You know, you have only still one column for player and item, and in the worst case, it's a hash, so you can't even really see what's the player and what's the entity. Then we had a realization, which is ECS is basically just a subset of relational databases. And it has one limitation, which is the entity has to be the key. And so we decided to lift this limitation and instead model it as a table, which made modeling something like an inventory much easier. And ECS can still be represented within this new model because it's a subset. So you can now have something like the position table still just by using the entity as the only key. That sounds like an easy change, but it was actually much harder than we thought. We proposed doing this early in 2023, and then we also proposed changing the world framework to work better with this data model. But turns out, we were wrong. It wasn't just a 20-minute adventure. It almost took us an entire year and was basically a full rewrite of the entire thing. And migrating from version 1 to V2 was pretty painful for the people who started building with version 1. We felt that in our own team. We started building SkyStrife on the first version, and then we had to migrate it to the second version, which drove Kushaba, our main engineer on SkyStrife, almost crazy. But once we pushed through it, it was worth it. The gas was way down because we focused way more on gas optimization. And the improved data model and the improved sync stack meant that now you could load the client much, much, much faster. And so once we pushed through it, it was worth it. And Kushaba was happy again. Then more and more teams started using MUD. And also larger studios like CCP Games started building their new game, eFrontier, on MUD. And so we realized, more and more teams were already pushing for production back then. And so we realized, okay, it's time for an audit. We then worked with Open Zeppelin to audit the core of MUD, but still maintain the flexibility to add more features as modules, because MUD version 2 was built to be very modular. But what that also means is that there are no more breaking changes in the core of MUD. And that now means that we can, on our end, first focus more on the integrations and developer experience, but also other third parties can now, you know, trust this interface that it won't break anymore, and build integrations on top. So I want to show you a couple things that we built in terms of developer experience since then. Here you see the World Explorer, which basically allows you to inspect the transactions that are happening in your, in this case, local client, but also remote deployed world in real time and inspect the round trip and everything. And then also the table view where you can inspect all of your tables data in the World Explorer. So all of your on-chain state, you can just inspect it here. And then we have a second view of the World Explorer, which is a slightly more complex table, where now we can even use SQL to filter the table. So in this case, we have a task list, and we filter it to the ones that are completed or the ones that are not completed. And then the last thing I want to show you is, again, World Explorer. But the World Explorer is basically just the UI for all the other features that we had to build below that. Here you can see the World Explorer automatically synchronizes the ABI of the world, and you can interact with the ABI through the World Explorer. And then when you modify your contracts, your systems, it's automatically picked up by the contract staff runner, and it's going to update the ABI on the World Explorer immediately. So you can, again, interact with your new functionality on the World Explorer immediately. And these, these stable interfaces enable more and more integrations to be built. And we wanted to take that commitment one step further for the stable interface. And so we're now working on an ERC for the store standard, so for the events and the interface of the store. It's currently in draft state, ERC 7813, if you want to follow along or join the discussion. And yeah, the hope is that will allow more and more tools and integrations to be built on top of that. And I want to give a shout out to Block Scout at this point, because they already built an integration for MUT. So now you can go on Block Scout, explore the worlds there, and even inspect the table data directly from Block Scout. All right. All of that brings us to the present chapter of making it fast. Imagine you want to join a new, shiny, autonomous world. All right, it doesn't load, but just imagine, use your imagination. But then suddenly you're greeted by a fox, and the fox tells you that you don't have any funds on this chain. And now you have to find a bridge to bridge the funds to this chain, and then you have to approve that transaction. And then when you want to make a move in the world, you have to approve that transaction and approve another one. And every time you want to do anything, you have to approve all of those transactions. And we don't want that, for our games at least. When you're logged in, we don't want to hit approve every time. And so there already is the foundation for very smart, very smooth onboarding in the contracts of MUT. But we can take it further with client-side libraries and deeper integration with smart accounts. So what MUT already allows you is to create a session wallet and then create a scope delegation and then avoid that approval pop-up. And here's what it looks like in action. Hopefully that one loads. So you can see, you could connect a wallet here, or you can just create a new wallet if you don't have a wallet yet. In this case, one that's secured by a passkey. And then you get an allowance on this chain immediately, which is basically some ETH that you can only spend on actions on this chain. And then you basically approve the delegation, scoped and temporary delegation to a session wallet. And now you can make moves in this game immediately without having to click the approve button all the time. And one thing you also saw there is the fly was moving pretty fast. That's something I'm not going to talk about right now, but we have another session later today that explains how the fly can move so fast. Quick bonus chapter. What's happening in the future after making it fast? Make it scale. We can already see the first worlds that are starting to outgrow single chains, and we can see much more worlds that are, some of them presenting today, that are basically have a clear trajectory of outgrowing a single chain, even the most powerful single chain. So we eventually have to scale those worlds across multiple chains. And MUT was always about improving the developer experience. And so one thing that will be a big theme of next year will be, can we use MUT to basically abstract away the multi-chain developer experience and just make it feel like you're building on a single chain, but have the ability to scale across multiple chains? All right, with that, we've completed the MUT time travel, and I'm very excited for what's next. We'll see a bunch of demos and then also later a bunch of talks. And we have a gaming corner over there where later you can try out some of the Mutt games as well. And then later, I don't know what time, but something around 1 or something, we have also some announcements to make. So be sure to catch that. And yeah, with that, thank you very much and have fun.
All right, Alvarez cannot leave yet. We're going to give you guys about 30 seconds to scan this QR code, log into ZooPass. You don't need a frog for this interaction, but you should have frogs if you don't have frogs. Anyway, so you scan this thing and you can ask questions to Alvarez. They will appear on the screen. I will read the questions and we'll see what he thinks. We have about 2 minutes worth of question time, so hurry up. Everybody's busy making ZK proofs. Whoa, okay. First question. Are there any plans to make Mutt use less gas, Alvarez?
That's a great question. So we spent already a lot of time making Mutt 2 much more gas efficient than Mutt 1. And now we're at the point where if you use Mutt to do the things you know, like if you would build an app from scratch and you would set the storage and you would emit an event, you know, to sync the state on the client, it's not going to be much more gas efficient actually than to use Mutt. So it might seem like it's using more gas, but that's just because there's so much stuff that, you know, comes by default out of the box that you would have to implement yourself in Solidity if you wanted to get to the same functionality. So while we always, you know, optimize the stuff, it's not as gas inefficient as you might think on first sight.
Thank you. The next most upvoted question is, sorry, I am a noob. Thanks for coming, by the way, if you're a noob. We appreciate. Why is it good to put movements on chain, for example?
It's essentially, I mean, it's almost like a philosophical question, but the more stuff you put on chain, the more downstream integrations you enable, because it's like, you're deploying to this public computer and this public, you know, database that anybody else can also deploy to. And the more stuff is in there, the more can be used for downstream integration. So let's say you put movements on chain. Now somebody could build an integration that, you know, does something if you move to a certain position. That wouldn't be possible if you don't put movements on chain.
Thank you, Alvarez. Another round of applause, please.